the council who requested me to give a class on Vaishnava etiquette. Actually, this year, starting from 20th of September, for a month in Vrindavan, there will be a regular 1 month long course on different subjects. And one of those subjects will be Vaishnava etiquette, and I have been asked to give the course. So, giving classes on those topics will also give me a nice practice, or it will help me to prepare my course better, I feel. And as a matter of fact, we all have come here to become Vaishnavas. Our only objective of joining the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is to become Vaishnavas. So we have to be aware how a Vaishnava behaves and what are the basic etiquettes that a Vaishnava follows. The course has been divided. Actually, this course will last for 1 month, and there will be 20 lessons. It's starting from the 20th of September and will continue till the 20th of October. And they have been divided into different sections. The course, the first one is the etiquette between Vaishnavas, etiquette in the temple, etiquette towards the holy name, etiquette towards Krishna's dham and holy items, etiquette with prasadam, etiquette in dressing and tilak, etiquette with guests and at public appearances. So these are the seven sections. And then the lessons have been divided into 20. 1 and 2 is philosophy of etiquette, what etiquette is, what it does, what it means to our preaching. 3 is etiquette in the temple, obeisances, circumambulating, and the 64 offenses. 4, seeing the deity, meditation, and offerings. 5, receiving guests and Vaishnavas in the temple. 6, etiquette within relationships, grihasthas, sannyasis, godbrothers, gurus, common people, and members of other sampradayas. 7, avoiding and rectifying Vaishnava aparadhas, how to speak to devotees and speak about them. 8, how to treat guests in one's home, initial greetings, sitting arrangements, refreshments, speaking about business, etc. 9 and 10, how to serve and honor prasadam. 11, kirtan etiquette, how to lead, follow, dance, and relish. 12, japa etiquette, how to handle beads, how to chant, and how to avoid offenses. 13, premadhani prayers, pronunciation, meaning, and practice. 14, dressing and tilak. 15 and 16, etiquette in public, how to speak and act outside programs, at the homes of life members and friends, with relatives, and at moths or ashrams. 17, how to respect holy items. 18 and 19, how to act in holy places, how to respect holy rivers, demigod temples, and abodes of Vishnu, and how to avoid offenses. 20, how to respect other sampradayas and religions. So these are the 20 lessons. So I was thinking maybe we'll be able to, we will cover up to 10. That is, the last one is how to serve and honor prasadam. So, and today I want to discuss some basic, the preliminary approach to this topic, Vaishnava etiquette. The Sanskrit word for Vaishnava etiquette is Vaishnava Sadachar. The Sadachar is a conjunction of two words, Sat and Achar. Sat means a saintly person. And Achar means activities. How a saintly person acts or should act is called Vaishnava Sadachar. Like Vaishnava doesn't simply mean shaving the head, putting tilak and wearing a kanti bead, wearing dhoti and kurta and so on and so forth. Vaishnava actually is a person who is situated in his spiritual identity. Vaishnava is a pure spirit soul or a spirit soul who is aspiring to become pure. So the activities of a Vaishnava is always very pure. And the way a Vaishnava acts, that's called Vaishnava Sadachar or Vaishnava etiquette. Like when you become a policeman, then we have to act in certain ways. When we become a policeman and wear the police uniform, we cannot just act like anybody else. Or when you become a soldier in the army, and wearing the uniform of a soldier, we have to act in certain way, very disciplined way. So same way, when we dress up like a Vaishnava, we have to act in a very specific way, and that is called Vaishnava etiquette. So today I'll just discuss some basic Vaishnava practices that are very common, and Srila Prabhupada instructed us about them. Like Srila Prabhupada gave us few instructions or few rules. Like one is, we must get up before 4 a.m. We must get up before Brahma Muhurta and attain Mangalarti. That is one of the Vaishnava practices for us. Because ours is a society of Vaishnavas known as the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And it is a must. Prabhupada said everybody must attain Mangalarti. That means one must get up before 4 a.m. Here, of course, I think one must get up before, at least before 3 a.m., 3:30 a.m. Then take bath when you wake up from sleep. Not only in the morning when we wake up, we must take bath right after getting up. But Prabhupada actually said that whenever we sleep for 2 hours, if we sleep for more than 2 hours, then we must take a bath. And it is preferable not to sleep during the daytime. It is better to go to bed early and get up early than go to bed late and get up early and then sleep during the daytime. Actually, if we strictly follow the Vaishnava etiquette, then it is considered that to sleep during the day is a crime, is a sin, and one must atone for that sin. So preferably we would try to, it is better to try to go to sleep early and get up early. Early to bed, early to rise. Makes a man healthy, wealthy and wise. So it is very good, even from the materialistic understanding, to get up early. But in order to get up early, we must go to bed early also. And according to Ayurveda, if we go to sleep, if the sleep that we have before 12 midnight, 1 hour sleep is like 2 hours sleep after midnight. Like if we sleep for 2 hours before 12, it is like 4 hours after 12. 4 hours sleep after 12 midnight. Sometimes it becomes difficult to go to sleep early, especially when you have late night programs. In those cases, of course, it can be considered. Like if somebody goes to bed late, then he should at least, Prabhupada says, one should at least get 6 hours sleep. And if somebody gets up for Mangal Arati, for him, to cover up that 6 hours sleep, he can sleep during the day. That is different. But otherwise, you should try not to sleep for more than 6 hours. So, even during the day, if you sleep for more than 2 hours, you must take a bath. Taking bath is very good. Even medically or biologically it says that taking bath actually rejuvenates our blood circulation and makes us feel fresh. So more often we can take bath is actually better for us. Then another consideration is one must take bath after passing stools. Otherwise Vaishnavas always take bath after passing stools. Prabhupada gave this instruction very definitely. Then one must wash himself, his hand and feet after passing urine. Then one must wash his hand, feet, mouth before taking prasad and after taking prasad. In the West, people are accustomed to the habit of using knives and forks. So after taking their food, they don't bother to wash their hands and feet. But in India, it's a very common practice to wash their hands and feet before taking prasad and after taking prasad. Because when you are using your hands, then you have to be careful that your hands are clean before you take prasad. And after you have taken prasad with your hands automatically become dirty. So, you have to wash them. So it is actually better to use hands to take prasad. Actually the digestion begins with touching the food with hands. Actually digestion begins with seeing the food. When you see the food, then you begin to assimilate it. You get the idea in your mind what you are going to eat. Then you touch it with your hand, then you have the feel, and then you mix the food according to your taste. And then you put it in your mouth. And then you taste it with your tongue. And then it goes to your stomach. So process of digestion actually begins much before you put the food in your stomach, or even in your mouth. And especially, Prabhupada said that the brahmanas should cook the food themselves. A brahmin always cooks his food in the Vedic culture, in the Vedic society. And when one is cooking the food, he is actually getting the feeling what he is cooking, how he is cooking. So that's why it is very important that one cooks for himself and then offers it to Krishna. And by offering it to Krishna, actually when one cooks the food, he is meditating how Krishna is going to like it, or what kind of food Krishna likes to eat. And then you have to automatically cook nicely. Because if you are meditating on Krishna's taste, you know Krishna has the best taste. And if you cook something that is not nice, then Krishna will not accept it. Of course. Not nice means not with enough devotion. If we cook with devotion, then Krishna will take it. And devotion means meditating on how Krishna will like the food. So that's why one of the qualities of a Vaishnava is that he is a good cook also. Like Prabhupada was a perfect cook. I mean, I think Prabhupada is the best cook I have ever seen. Whatever Prabhupada cooked was so delicious. And it is a known fact that most of the devotees actually joined ISKCON being attracted by Prabhupada's cooking or the way Prabhupada taught the devotees to cook. So food is a very, very important thing. And one of the instructions Prabhupada gave me when I was serving him was, see that devotees get nice prasad. Like he told me that these boys and girls have sacrificed everything. They have given up all sense enjoyments. The only sense enjoyment that they indulge in is Krishna prasad. So make sure that they get nice prasad. So this is one point. Everyone must wash hands and feet and mouth before taking prasad and after taking prasad. Then must brush teeth after waking up. As soon as one wakes up in the morning, he must brush his teeth. Usually in India, in the Vedic society, they use twigs of different trees, the branches of different trees like neem or babla. They are very healthy, but in the West you don't get it, so you can use toothbrush and toothpaste. Then must wash hands even after drinking water. Even after we drink water, we must wash our hands. And that's the part of cleanliness. Actually, this concept of cleanliness is very subtle. The more we go deep into our spiritual activities, our activities or our perceptions become subtle. Like although there is no contact between the hand and mouth, you are holding the glass and drinking water, but still it is understood that your hand becomes contaminated. So one must wash his hands. Then sannyasi should take bath 3 times a day and grihastas and brahmacharis at least 2 times a day. So that's another must. Of course, I mean, in the West often we do not really practice this, but sannyasi should take bath 3 times a day. Then after taking prasad, the area where the plates were kept must be cleaned. Of course, and also it says, one should not step on the area where prasadam was taken because it is considered to be contaminated. Generally we take prasad on the floor, and after taking prasad, some rice and some things are lying on the floor, so that must be cleaned right after taking prasad, because that area actually becomes contaminated. And if one steps on that area, and often I have noticed in temples, it happens, like they take prasad, and after taking prasad, they just step, while they are going to wash their hands and mouth, they just step on their place where the plates were actually kept. And then, with the same dirty feet, they walk into the temple room. But we have to be very sensitive about it. Actually in India, it's a custom that when one enters into the temple, he must wash his feet. And in Tirupati temple, they have a very nice arrangement. Like as one approaches the temple, there's a vast area that has constant flow of running water. Constant flow of water. And they have to step onto that place. In order to enter into the temple, you have to step onto the water. And naturally your feet are washed. So they're very intelligent. That was a very intelligent way of forcing everyone to wash his feet. So we must be careful that when we enter into a temple, we are clean. Especially our feet are clean. And when you take prasad on the table, then after taking prasad, that place, they clean the whole place. That's very clean. Like in Mayapur we do that, and in Calcutta also we do that. So somebody should be sensitive about it, and after the devotees have taken prasad, must clean the temple, clean the tables here. Then, after touching the inside of the mouth and or nose, one must wash his hands. Like, in the West, people are not very sensitive about washing. Like, I remember once I was working on a book with some karmis in Manchester. One Christian religious group wanted to print a book on Hinduism. And they invited us, so I was working with them. And the lady who was assisting us, who was kind of representing that organization, one day we were working at her place, and she told us that they are actually vegetarians. And she said that she baked some bread herself, and she wanted to know whether we would take the bread. Because we were taking, Ramchandra Prabhu and myself were working with her. And we used to take prasad from the temple. But that day she said that she made the bread herself. So also we thought that maybe we can take that since she's a vegetarian. And when she was making the bread, she cut the bread and she was spreading some butter and cheese. And the time after that, I think there was a speck of butter in her fingertips. And she just licked the finger. I just couldn't take that. After that, when she made that, gave me the piece of bread with or a sandwich, I could not take it because I had such a dirty feeling that she licked her finger with her tongue, and then she was preparing the bread, holding the bread with the same hand. Actually, whenever we touch our mouth with our hands, we must wash our hands. And sometimes we touch our nose, especially inside of our nose, then also our hands, we must wash our hands. Then, must do ashraman after putting tilak by saying Om Keshavaya Namaha, Om Narayanaya Namaha and Om Madhavaya Namaha. So this is a practice that was not actually introduced by Prabhupada, and I didn't see anyone doing it, except in the pujaris. But it is nice, because this is a ashraman, these are the ashraman mantras. And after putting tilak, whenever we put tilak after taking bath, we must do achaman, put water in our palm and drink it. And then three times we must say, do achaman and say, Om Keshavaya Namaha, Om Narayanaya Namaha and Om Madhavaya Namaha. And then use right hand for eating and drinking. In the West, people generally use both hands and to take prasad, but it is considered that left hand is contaminated. Right hand is for eating and left hand is dirty. So, while eating, we do not use left hand. For eating and drinking, we should not use our left hand. So, There are some other things also that I did not mention here. The one is to observe Ekadasi. A devotee must observe the Ekadasis and the different appearances of the Lord. And so these are the general basic practices of a Vaishnava that I intended to mention in the beginning of the class, and then I'll get into the Vaishnava etiquette course. Hare Krishna. The first lesson in this course is going to be the philosophy of Vaishnava etiquette. And the philosophy of Vaishnava etiquette has been basically divided into three sections. One is, what is Vaishnava etiquette? What Vaishnava etiquette does to a person when a person practices or behaves according to those etiquettes, what it does to him, and then what it means to our preaching. This Vaishnava etiquette, what significance does it bear to our preaching movement? Now, as I mentioned yesterday, the Vaishnava etiquette literally means the code of conduct of a Vaishnava. And Vaishnava is a person who has been surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. As a matter of fact, every living entity is a part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as a part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everyone is actually supposed to be connected to the Lord, or must be subordinate to the Lord. And that subordination is manifest through the attitude of devotion. Then again, devotion literally means rendering service out of love. A part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, living entities, are connected to the Supreme Personality of Godhead by means of this loving devotional service. We notice that love brings together, love is a factor that brings each other together, and hatred separates us. Now, if we want to become connected or linked up with the Lord, then we must love Him. And through this love, we become connected to Him. So, a Vaishnava is a person who has developed that loving relationship with the Lord, or one who is trying to develop that loving relationship with the Lord. So both are considered to be Vaishnava. One who is trying to be related to the Lord, and those who have already been related or already situated in their loving relationship with the Lord. Now, the first category of devotees or Vaishnavas, those who are trying to become related to the Lord, they are called Vaidhi Bhaktas, or devotees, those who are practicing to become a devotee, the practitioners or the apprentices, and those who have been situated on the pure Vaishnava platform, they are known as pure devotees of the Lord. One is a Sadhu Bhakta and the other one is known as Premi Bhakta. Sadhu means one who is practicing, and Premi Bhakta means one who has already developed his spontaneous love for the Lord. So these are the two kinds of devotees. Now, the activities of these two kinds of devotees differ to some extent. Like, the devotees, those who are in the sadhana bhakti platform, those who are practicing to become a devotee, they follow these Vaishnava etiquettes or the activities of a Vaishnava without spontaneity. They are actually practicing, so they have to force themselves to act in that way. Like regarding that, Prabhupada gives the example that we generally don't want to get up in the morning. We don't like to get up early in the morning. But a devotee has to force himself to get up early in the morning. We don't like to take baths early in the morning, especially when it's very cold. But a Vaishnava forces himself, a sadhak bhakta, or a devotee who is practicing devotional service, he forces himself. The same way, when we go into the more intricate aspects of devotional behavior, like a Vaishnava is humble. Vaishnava must be very, very humble. Now, a devotee who is practicing to become a Vaishnava, he is not very humble, because in the material platform we are very arrogant, which is diametrically opposite to being humble. So, since we are situated in a material platform, but since we are trying to become a devotee, we train ourselves to become humble. We train ourselves to become respectful to other Vaishnavas. We train ourselves to conquer our lust, greed, anger, etc. So it is an endeavor. So we are endeavoring to practice. We are endeavoring to become a devotee. We are endeavoring to follow the codes of conduct of a devotee. But there is another class of devotees, those who are in the pure platform, pure devotional platform. Now they, whatever they do, is Vaishnava etiquette. Because they are Vaishnavas, whatever they do, that becomes the etiquette. But then again, Prabhupada points out that a pure devotee, he, although he is situated in a liberated platform, still he does not disobey or disregard the codes of conduct. Like he practices for the sake of the less advanced devotees or for the sake of conditioned living entities. Otherwise, people will not take them seriously. Or people will think that, well, it is not important that I also follow the codes of conduct of a Vaishnava. Like this is very obvious in our society. We see that the way the leaders act, accordingly the followers follow. Krishna also is saying in Bhagavad Gita, Jajjas acharati shreshtas stattat eve tarajana sajat pramanam kurute lokastad anuvartate. Jajjas acharati shreshta. The way a great personality acts, accordingly, the mass follows, because it's the natural tendency of the common people to follow the great personalities. Now, if the great personalities do not act in a systematic or in a civil way, then people also will not. The common people also will not act accordingly. On the other hand, people will think that, well, when I become a great devotee, then I don't have to follow all these rules and regulations. So there is no, even the great devotees do not transgress the rules and regulations. Krishna is telling that if he gives up the rules and regulations, if he doesn't act properly, then the other people also will not follow the rules and regulations. So Krishna, although he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he comes to this material nature and he behaves according to those rules and regulations, although he does not have any necessity of following the rules and regulations. So that's why we have to understand that no matter how advanced we become, we must follow these rules and regulations. And as a matter of fact, in an advanced stage, we will follow these rules and regulations spontaneously. It is not that when we become advanced, we give up the rules and regulations. On the other hand, as we become advanced, we spontaneously follow these rules and regulations. And that is the unique aspect of spiritual rules and regulations. In the material platform, the law or rules and regulations are there to curb the activities of a person, to restrict him. In the material platform, law actually restricts people. But in the spiritual platform, the laws enhances, or rather the laws enhance the activities of the devotees. The laws are there not to curb, not to suppress him, but the laws are there to enhance his devotional mood. Now an example can be given, like we see that sometimes in ourselves we often think that, well, I am an advanced devotee, so I don't need to attend Mangal Arati. Sometimes it was becoming quite common in our society. The advanced devotees, the senior devotees, were not attending Mangal Arati or attending classes, attending the morning programs. And the feeling was that this attending Mangal Arati and following these programs are meant for the less advanced devotees. But that's not true. Actually, more advanced we become, we'll become more eager to attend these programs. Like, and more advanced we become, we'll be waiting when it will be 4 o'clock, and when the conch shell will blow, and I'll be able to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When it is the time when the Lord will get dressed, and I'll get his darshan during Shringar Arati at 6:30. When it will be the time for Guru Puja. Actually, as we become purified from our material contaminations, we'll become more and more eager to follow these rules and regulations. Not that as we become advanced, we give up rules and regulations. And one big danger of that is devotees, less advanced devotees or junior devotees, I won't say less advanced, I would rather say junior devotees will think that when I become senior, then I also won't have to attend Mangal Arati. So we have to be very careful about always following these Vaishnava practices. Prabhupada has given a very simplified rule to follow. Prabhupada said that no matter whatever happens, everybody must attend Mangal Arati. Everybody must attend the morning programs. And this is another thing, like often we fail to realize the importance of this practices. So, now what it does to us, what Vaishnava etiquette or following these rules and regulations does to us. As we follow these rules and regulations, or as we follow these etiquettes, then our heart becomes purified of material contamination. So that's what practice does. Practice makes a man perfect. So when we are in an imperfect situation, but if we keep on practicing, then this practice makes us perfect. Prabhupada, regarding that, gives an example in Nectar of Devotion. A child doesn't have the ability to walk. A child cannot walk. But the mother helps the child to walk, holds him by the hand and gradually helps him to walk. And then the child gradually learns to walk. Now, Prabhupada is pointing out that a human child has the ability to walk, inherent ability to walk, and that's why when the mother helps him, he gradually begins to walk. But if we try to train a dog or a cat to walk with two legs, on its two legs, it won't be able to walk. No matter how much you try to help him, or no matter how much it practices. So this spiritual inclination, or our natural tendency to love Krishna, or natural tendency to become a devotee of Krishna, is there, inherent in us. But it is covered. So now these practices or practices of Vaishnava etiquette purifies our hearts, removes those material contaminations, and then gradually we spontaneously develop this tendency to love Krishna. Our love for Krishna becomes spontaneously manifest. And it is very important also to practice this process of Krishna consciousness, because ours is a preaching movement. We are preachers. And as a preacher, we must be very careful how people think about us. Now, if we do not act properly, then people will not be impressed by us. People will think that these people are not saintly, although we are pretending to be saintly, although we are claiming to be saintly people. But others will say that, well, these people are not actually saintly, because they are not behaving like a saint. As I mentioned yesterday, actually Vaishnava etiquette or Vaishnava sadachar means the activities of a saintly person. So if we don't act like a saintly person, people will not take us seriously. And Prabhupada says that then it will become hypocritical. So we have to be very careful how we behave. And especially since we are a preaching movement, our behavior is very, very important. There are two types of Vaishnavas also. There are Goshtiyanandis and Bhajanandis. Goshtiyanandis are the devotees, those who live together in a Goshti. Goshti in an assembly. There are one kind of Vaishnav, those who live in an assembly, and their main objective is to spread Krishna consciousness. Their main objective is preaching. But there is another kind of devotees, those who are known as Bhajanandis. The Bhajanandis, they practice their Krishna consciousness in an isolated place, and their activities are basically internal. Preaching is an external thing. But the Bhajanandis, they are involved more into internal cultivation of Krishna consciousness. Now, these Bhajanandis, they are not so much concerned about what people think about them. And so, actually, Bhajanandi platform is a very, very elevated platform.
The six Goswamis were in the Bhajanandi platform. Bhajanandena Mattaliko. So they were in a very elevated Bhajanandi platform. And their activity, but still, they also followed the proper Vaishnava etiquette. They never transgressed Vaishnava etiquette. But also, then again, we find there are some very elevated persons, those who do not really, apparently do not follow these etiquettes. One example is King Rishabhdev. King Rishabhdev apparently was not following the Vaishnava etiquette. But that is a very, very elevated platform. But although apparently he was not following, but actually he was following. Like when he met a Vaishnava, he must have behaved like a Vaishnava and treated him like a Vaishnava. But apparently he looked like a madman. Nobody could understand why he was behaving like that. And also regarding that, another example is Nityananda Prabhu. And this is another nice example actually. Nityananda Prabhu's behavior sometimes was inconceivable. Like, say for instance, Vaishnava etiquette is that a Vaishnava is very, very respectful to other Vaishnavas. But Nityananda Prabhu sometimes would behave like a madman. Like once when the Bengali Vaishnavas were going to Jagannath Puri, the group was led by Sivananda Sen, one very intimate associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Sivananda Sen used to take care of the devotees' lodging and pudding. So one day in the toll, in the border, Sivananda Sen got a little delayed. He was specifying the tax collector, because the tax collector demanded too much money and he was specifying him, negotiating with him. Cursing Sivananda Sen that all his sons will die. So his wife, Sivananda Sen's wife, was very upset. She was crying. And when Sivananda Sen came, she was crying and complained to Sivananda Sen, Nityananda Prabhu is cursing us like this. And Sivananda Sen said, that is your good fortune. If our children die out due to the curse of Nityananda Prabhu, that is the greatest benediction. If by Nityananda Prabhu's curse our children die, consider it to be the greatest benediction for them. And then when Sivananda Sen went to Nityananda Prabhu, then Nityananda Prabhu just kicked him on the chest. Now apparently it's not a Vaishnava etiquette. Vaishnavas don't behave like that. But here you have to understand that these are very, very intimate dealings between very elevated Vaishnavas. The very elevated Vaishnavas, they act on a spiritual platform, and from our mundane observation or mundane judgment, it is completely inconceivable. But we should not imitate those elevated activities of the Vaishnavas. The etiquette of Vaishnavas has been described very wonderfully, especially in two books. One is The Nectar of Devotion, and the other is Hari Bhakti Vilas by Sanatana Goswami. And we must try to act like a Vaishnava. Especially our dealings with each other. Yeah, now let us consider there are three stages of behavior, or three kinds of behavior among Vaishnavas. Now all these dealings of the Vaishnavas are based on love. And it has been described in the scriptures that the love begins with a feeling called mamota. The Sanskrit word mamota is coming from the word momo. I'm sure everybody knows this, Sanskrit word momo. Like aham mameti. Mama means mine. Mine. And mamata is that feeling that something is mine. Now the Vaishnava feels that the other Vaishnavas are his. He has a relationship with him. He is my brother, or he is my father, or he is my uncle, or he is my son, or he is my nephew. So this feeling that he is my relative is called mamata. And Vaishnava dealings of loving relationship begins with this feeling of mamata. Vaishnavas feel for each other. We are not just two persons standing there completely isolated from each other. No, we are together. And unless and until we develop the feeling of mamata, that somebody is something to me, we cannot really develop a loving relationship, or we cannot even develop friendship. And as we become advanced, this mamata increases. Actually, this mamata is manifest in every living entity. Prabhupada gives this example in Nectar of Devotion, that even a lion, that is such a ferocious animal, even a lion has mamata for his cubs. Or the lioness feels very affection, very intense affection for her cubs, for her young ones. So we can see it is manifest even in animals. A snake, such a ferocious animal, I mean, say a snake is considered to be the most ruthless animal. But even a snake feels affection for its children. So obviously in human beings, this feeling of mamata is very, very intense. But we have our limitations. Like a father in a family, the father feels mamata for his wife and children, or his relatives, or his friends. So we can see that everybody has this feeling of mamata, but a Vaishnava feels this mamata for every living entity. More advanced one is, the more intense is his feeling of mamata. And that's why a pure devotee feels love and compassion for everybody, for every living entity. Towards his most, his greatest enemy. A Vaishnava feels that fear, that mamata for his greatest enemy also. There is a very nice story that there is a Vaishnava called Lala Babu. He was a very big businessman, but he became a devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he gave up his wealth and he became a very humble Vaishnava. So he became a beggar. Like a Vaishnava ultimately becomes a mendicant or a beggar. Like we all are actually beggars. And so this Lala Babu, he was begging from door to door, but then he felt that his heart was not completely purifying. There was still some contamination in his heart. So then he felt that actually he is still having a feeling of duality. Because he realized that there was another very big businessman who was his competitor, and there was an enmity between them. And Lala Babu was not going to his house to beg, because the feeling of enmity was still there. So he decided that, no, I must go and beg from his house. So he went to that man's house, and he went there as a beggar. Like one time they were both of them were big competitors in business and had very strong enmity. So, and that is how he purified his heart. And that other person also, now when he saw that Lala Babu came to his house as a beggar, who at one time was a millionaire, he got the news and he came running and he just embraced him. So this is how Vaishnav does not have any enemy. So I stop now. Hare Krishna.
Today we are going to discuss about the etiquette in the temple. So this part consists of three aspects, like how one should feel when one comes to the temple, and circumambulation and offering obeisances. So this temple is actually non-different from Vaikuntha. The temple is the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Vaikuntha. The word Vaikuntha means the place where nobody has any anxiety. In the spiritual sky, no one has any anxiety because everyone is completely surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is protecting everyone and taking care of everyone. As a matter of fact, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, takes care of everyone. Even in the material nature, Krishna is taking care of everyone. But in the material nature, due to our material conditioning, due to our ignorance, we are not aware of that. We do not see how Krishna is always protecting us and how Krishna is always maintaining us. And due to that ignorance, we are always trying to make arrangements for our maintenance and for our protection. But in the spiritual sky, everyone is aware of that fact, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna or Vishnu, is maintaining everyone and protecting everyone. That's why no one there has any anxiety. And if somebody, even in the material platform, develops that mentality that I am protected by the Lord and I am being maintained by the Lord, then he also will become free from anxiety. And that's why devotees are free from anxiety. We notice that before we became devotees, we had so much anxiety. But after we became devotees, our anxieties became reduced. Now, personally I remember, the first feeling I had when I made up my mind, when I decided that I'm going to join ISKCON, I'm going to surrender myself to Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet, the first feeling that I had was a feeling of total relaxation. I felt very relaxed. I felt absolutely free from anxiety. I remember very well that that time I felt that now, from now on, I won't have to worry about myself anymore. I'm surrendering myself to Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he will take care of me. And I'm sure everybody feels that way when he becomes a devotee. So, especially when we come to the temple, we must realize that fact that Krishna is personally present here, and this place is Krishna's abode, and this place is non-different from Vaikuntha. And when one comes to the temple, one must behave also accordingly. Like we must feel, had we been present in Vaikuntha, how would we have behaved? We can well imagine. So we must behave the same way when we come to the temple. When somebody goes to the king's palace or king's court, he can't just act in a whimsical way. Can one do that? Never. When one goes to the king's palace or king's court, he has to behave himself. He has to behave accordingly. He has to be always aware, oh, this is the king's palace, and I am supposed to be careful about my behavior. I must be always concerned how I am acting, and I should not act in a unmannerly way. So the same way we must feel when you come to the temple. We have come to the palace of the King of the Kings, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is personally present here. And we must behave properly. So that is how one must feel when one is present in the temple. And it has been also mentioned that when somebody commits some offense in the temple, then that becomes the result or reaction of that offense becomes very intensive, very much intensified, multiplied by many times. Because we are actually committing the offense right in front of the Lord. And that's why it has been said in Nectar of Devotion, Prabhupada has instructed how we must behave in the temple. And Prabhupada said that one must not insult or talk harsh words to others. Because the Lord is present here and we must not behave harshly or in an indecent way in front of the Lord. When we enter the temple, we must ring the bell and announce that we are entering into the Lord's room. We must announce to the Lord that, my Lord, may I come to your room? And with that mentality we ring the bell. We have a bell right outside the temple, next to the door. Why is it? Because one must ring the bell before entering into the temple. And why should one ring the bell? To ask the Lord's permission. My dear Lord, can I enter into your room now? And so taking his permission, and then as we step into the temple, we must glorify the Lord loudly. That we must say all glories to Sri Hari, or you can say Hare Krishna, or you can say Jai Radha Krishna, or Jai Gaur Nithai, Jai Jagannath. So some words of praise must be offered to the Lord when we enter into the temple. Now this is a very important thing to consider, that in Krishna consciousness, whatever we do is not a blind ritual. Everything that we do has certain significance. But when we are in ignorance, then it appears to be a ritual, a blind, meaningless ritual. But actually everything has a meaning. And to become aware of the significance or the meaning of our activities in Krishna consciousness is the stepping stone to becoming Krishna conscious. Like if we become more and more aware why we are doing this thing, we become more and more Krishna conscious. Like for instance, if we become aware of the fact why we are ringing the bell in the temple, when we enter into the temple room. And if we understand that, had I have been entering into a very important person's office, we could not just walk in straight away, can we? Like if you go to meet somebody, some very important person, can you just open the door and step in? No, you'll never be allowed to do that. So you must take his permission. So the same way, when we enter into Krishna's temple, we must do that. And when we enter into somebody's office, what do? When we press the bell and then we get the permission to enter into the office, what do? We open the door and step in, and what do we say? Good morning, sir. Isn't it? Or we address him. We express some feeling. We express some kind of honor to him. So the same way, we must do that to the Lord when we enter into his room. Of course, to Krishna we do not say good morning, because Krishna made every morning good for us. So we do not have to tell Krishna that. But we glorify him. Jai Radha Gopinath Ji. All glory to Radha Gopinath. Or Hare Krishna. All glory to Radha Krishna. And such words. It should be heartfelt. And that is the meaning of Krishna consciousness. We become conscious of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, and it is said that it is a crime to think that the temple is an ordinary place. If somebody thinks that this temple is like any other house, any other building, or this room, the temple room is like any other room, a big room, nicely decorated, but after all there is no specific significance of this room. And that kind of mentality is called naroki, or hellish, or criminal. If somebody is in ignorance and if he feels that way, that's one thing. But in spite of being aware of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his most elevated position, if one still thinks that way, that is criminal. So we must be very, very careful when we come to the temple of the Lord. And now, how one should enter into the temple, there are certain specific regulations given in the Vedic scriptures. Like one thing is that one must wash his feet before entering into the temple. Of course in the West it's not practical because it's a cold country and it's not possible to wash the feet before entering into the temple. But at least one must take off his shoes before entering into the temple. But in India it is a custom. Like as I was mentioning yesterday, in Tirupati temple, as one enters into the temple, there is about 10 feet long area that which is flooded with water, and the water is constantly running, and everybody has to step into that in order to enter into the temple, and his feet get automatically cleaned, or his feet get cleaned in the process. Like the running water is there and he steps into the water and the feet get cleansed. That's why every temple, before the temple, there in the early days, before they built a temple, in front of the temple there used to be a huge lake. And there used to be staircase leading to the water, and people, before entering into the temple, they used to wash their hands. If you go to Jagannath Puri, you'll see there are many, many lakes like that. Of course, not right in front of the temple, because there was the ocean. And now, of course, there are taps and tap water, and one can wash his feet. In Mayapur also, we have rows of taps just in front of the temple door, and everybody can wash his feet there. Then there are a few other instructions that Prabhupada specifically mentioned in Nectar of Devotion, so I won't go into the details about those, but briefly, a few things that we must become aware of is that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the supreme worshipable Lord. And when we are in the temple, then the Lord alone should be glorified. Only Krishna will be glorified in the temple. That's why in the temple one should not accept obeisances or offer obeisances. We often make this mistake that we worship, or rather we offer obeisances to others in front of the deities, but that is actually an offense. Only Krishna should be worshipped, and Krishna should be offered obeisances. And in front of Krishna, no one else should be offered obeisances. We should be aware of the fact. Like, one consideration for that is, when we worship Tulasi, we close the curtains. Why do we do that? Because Tulasi Devi does not accept worship in front of Krishna. Tulasi Devi doesn't want to accept worship in front of Krishna. Prabhupada accepted worship in front of Krishna. That actually indicates the very, very elevated position of Prabhupada. But we should not think that now I also can accept worship in front of Krishna. That is not proper. Even we may become guru to our disciples, but that doesn't give us the right to accept worship in front of Krishna. As far as Prabhupada's position is concerned, or Prabhupada's accepting worship is concerned, it actually simply indicate the very elevated position of Srila Prabhupada. We do not know who Prabhupada is. In the spiritual sky, who Prabhupada is, we do not know. But at least we can understand that Prabhupada must be very, very dear to Krishna. Very, very dear to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Very intimate associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself predicted that the holy name will spread all over the world in every town and village. And that Mahaprabhu himself did not do. That most important task of spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world, Mahaprabhu himself did not do. But Mahaprabhu predicted that in future it will happen. And even a few years ago, people could not believe that would happen. Even Gauriya Vaishnavas, even the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could not believe that the holy name would spread all over the world, in every town and village. But then Prabhupada came and he did it in a very short time. And the holy name spread all over the world, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's prediction came true. Now, did it happen just by chance? Did it happen just by chance or by accident? No. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu specifically sent Srila Prabhupada to accomplish that mission. So the person who came to accomplish that mission, a person who came to fulfill Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's prediction must be someone who is very dear to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we should be very careful about not imitating Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada accepted worship in the temple, but that doesn't mean that we also can accept worship in the temple, especially when it has been warned in the scriptures that one should not, what to talk about accept worship in the temple, one should not accept even obeisances in the temple. Another mistake we made in the past is not only accepting worshipping in the temple, accepting worship in the temple, but washing the feet in front of the deities. And that also with milk and milk products, yogurt and ghee and so on and so forth. Now milk and milk products are considered to be very, sacred. And that should not touch our feet. What to talk about milk products and milk, even we should not touch grains with our feet. Because it's the understanding that the Lakshmi Devi resides in grains. Grains are actually the manifestation of Lakshmi Devi's mercy. So even grains should not be touched by our feet because the grains are Lakshmi. So milk should be used only in washing and bathing Krishna. Not that anybody can accept that washing feet ceremony with milk. Yes, it's when a saintly person or a devotee comes to the temple, then his feet can be washed, but not in the temple, but outside with plain water. This was a Vedic custom because in the Vedic time, people used to walk barefoot. And when somebody used to go from one place to another, his feet used to get dirty. And then it was a natural custom that before entering into a house, one used to wash his feet. Now, as a gesture of hospitality, the landlord, the householder, used to wash the feet of the guest. Instead of guest washing the feet himself, the lord of the house or the people in the house used to wash his feet. So that is one thing, but not with milk and water and other things, and not in front of the deities in the temple. So we must be rather careful about these activities in the temple, and as I mentioned, one must not use harsh words in the temple, and one must speak softly. Unless you are glorifying the Lord, like when you are having kirtan, kirtan is actually the glorification of the Lord, singing His glories, then we can sing loudly. Or when we are giving Bhagavatam class or Bhagavad Gita class, then we can speak loudly because these are the glorification of the Lord. But when we are talking, we must talk. If at all we have to talk in the temple, we must talk very softly, preferably in whispers. And we must always be aware that Krishna is here, and Krishna is not just a piece of stone. It's not just a stone statue standing there who doesn't have consciousness. On the other hand, all the consciousness is coming from Him. And becoming aware of that fact is called Krishna consciousness. We all are conscious. And all our consciousness is actually an emanation of Krishna's consciousness. Krishna is like a sun And our consciousness is like different rays of sun, of the sun. We have a ray of consciousness, but that ray of consciousness is coming from the source of consciousness. And what is the source of consciousness? Krishna is the source of consciousness. Now to become aware of that fact that Krishna is here and Krishna is conscious of everything that we are doing is called Krishna consciousness. Then about circumambulation, there is a rule that Vishnu or Krishna, we must circumambulate Vishnu or Krishna 4 times. Whenever we circumambulate him, we must do it 4 times. And there is a shloka in Nrisimha Purana, I'm skipping the Sanskrit part. It says, one must circumambulate Chandi, that means Durga, once, Sun 7 times, Ganesh 3 times, Vishnu 4 times, and Shiva 1/2 time. Now, I could not figure out what this 1/2 time actually meant. But anyway, what we have to understand is Krishna must be circumambulated 4 times. In Vishnu Smriti, it has been mentioned that if one offers obeisances to Vishnu with one hand, circumambulates just one, and sees him while he is taking bath, eating or sleeping, then he loses all his previous piety. So we must not offer obeisances with one hand. Now this is one thing we have to be aware of, that is, often we actually do that unknowingly though. Like we offer obeisances with japamala in one hand. So that means one hand is engaged in holding the japamala. So if that's where we offer obeisances, how we are offering obeisances? We are offering obeisances with one hand. And we should not do that. The obeisances must be offered with both the hands. And when we offer obeisances in the temple, we must take the japamala out of our hand and keep it somewhere and then offer the obeisances. And also says about circumambulating just one also is not proper. We must circumambulate Vishnu 4 times, and we must not see him while he is taking bath, while he is taking rest, and while he is taking prasad, while he is taking our offering. So that's the time we keep the temple closed so that no one can see him at that time. Then Varaha Purana says, those who circumambulate Vishnu with devotion don't have to go to the abode of Yamaraj. They become devotees. This is the piety that one accumulates just by circumambulating the Lord. If somebody circumambulates the Lord, circumambulates Vishnu or Krishna, then he doesn't have to go to the abode of Yamaraj. Yamaraj is the Lord of death, and he punishes the living entities after death according to their sinful activities. So when one circumambulates Vishnu, then he becomes free from all sins and he doesn't have to go to the abode of Yamaraj. Now about circumambulating Vishnu, there is one nice story. Once a sparrow got
a small little sparrow was attacked by a cat, and somehow when it was attacked by the cat, it broke its wing and it could not fly off. So it was just going, trying to run away from the cat, jumping like that. And it happened next to a temple. And while trying to run away from the cat, the bird, with its broken wing, Sarkamam went around the temple 4 times on the right hand side. And then as soon as the bird went around the temple 4 times, the cat actually grabbed the bird and killed it. So the bird died. And because the bird died there, after circumambulating the temple 4 times, it became free from all its sins and it developed its four-armed spiritual form and went back to Vaikuntha. So this is the advantage of circumambulating. Like when we circumambulate Tulasi Devi, what do we sing? Jani kani cha papani, brahma hattari kani cha, tani tani pranashanti pradakshina pade pade. I'm sure everybody knows the meaning of this song. This means, jani kani cha papani, brahma hattari kani cha. All kinds of sins, even brahmahatta, killing a Brahmin. Killing a Brahmin is a very, very heinous act of sin. So it's a very very abominable sin is to kill a Brahmin. Now even the sin of killing a Brahmin is neutralized, is destroyed when we circumambulate Tulasi Devi. With every step we take while circumambulating Tulasi Devi, our sins become destroyed. So that is the advantage of circumambulating. Then Varaha Puran says, those who circumambulate Vishnu with devotion, oh yeah, I just read that, don't have to go to the abode of Jamaraj, they become devotees. And Skanda Puran says, O Brahmana, if one circumambulates Vishnu 4 times, then he derives the result of circumambulating the entire universe and receives more benefit than visiting all the holy places. So we don't have to go to the holy places, we can just circumambulate Krishna 4 times and actually we'll derive more benefit than circumambulating and then visiting all the holy places or even going around the universe. We go to different places and go to different holy places, not to acquire piety but to preach. That should be our objective. Now about obeisances, the next thing is that we must offer obeisances. Actually this should have been before circumambulating, because when you come to a temple, the first we offer obeisances and then we see the Lord and then we circumambulate Him. So about obeisances, or the word obeisance means, in Sanskrit it is called pranam. And pranam, the word has been derived from prakrishta rupena nipata. Prakrishta means very nicely and nipata means falling down. When you fall down very nicely, that is called pranam or obeisances. And In the material nature, everyone is very arrogant. Why did we fall down into the material nature? Because we became puffed up. And in the material nature, everyone is very puffed up, very arrogant. Now, everyone thinks that he is the greatest person. Now this feeling that I am the greatest is the cause of our material bondage. So if we want to become free from material bondage, then what we have to do? We have to feel that we are the smallest. And at least to begin with that, that feeling begins by becoming aware of the greatness of the Lord. And that's why we must offer obeisances to the Lord as an expression of our submission to Him. When we become submissive to the, as an expression of our submissive attitude to the Lord, we offer obeisances to Him. In the West, of course, there is no, this practice is not there. In the Western culture, there is no obeisances, but still, they kneel down. When, I remember early days, people used to do that. They used to kneel down, they used to bow down a little bit. Not fully, but a little bit. When somebody used to go in front of the king, what they used to do? They just kneel down, bend his knees and kneel down. We see when you go to a, not we, when somebody goes to a restaurant, what does the waiter do? He just bows down. So that's an expression that I am at your service. So this is the gesture, that I am at your service. Now in the West, the service attitude is not very prominent. That's why they bow down a little bit. But in the Vedic culture, they offer themselves completely. They fall flat on the ground. I am completely at your service. And that is the meaning of pranam or prakrishta rupena nipata or obeisances. So Nrisimha Puran says, obeisances is like performing sacrifice. When you offer obeisances, this gesture of obeisances is actually like performing sacrifice. And obeisances to Hari, offering obeisances to Hari is the greatest of all sacrifices. So we don't, when we offer obeisances, we must understand that this is the greatest of all sacrifices. And offering obeisances to Hari, just once, a man can become purified and attain Sri Hari's lotus feet. If we properly offer obeisances to Krishna once, then we can attain the shelter of his lotus feet. Then Hari Bhakti Sudhodaya says, when a devotee falls down to the ground to offer obeisances to Hari, then all his sins also fall down. That is, all his sins become destroyed. And then when he stands up, he becomes free from all his sins. Now, there are different kinds of offering obeisances. There's one kind of offering obeisances that's called Ashtanga Pranam. Like when you fall down flat on the ground, like a stick, as Prabhupada used to say, dandavat, or offering, falling down like a stick. And danda means a stick, and bat means like, falling down like a stick. In pure Sanskrit, it is called Ashtanga Pranam. And this Ashtanga Pranam is offered with legs, then thighs, the arms, chest, head, eyes, mind, and words. So with these eight things, we offer obeisances.
we fall down like a stick, our arms stretched forward. And the feeling is that with our arms,